I took my troubles down to Madam Ruth. You know that gypsy with the gold cap tooth.
Welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Today we're going to be talking about the third installment of what I covered in the last two Fridays, which is the New World Religion and its esoteric, ancient, and mystery religion origins, and how the key players in the background are utilizing this emerging world religion, this New Age cult, to prop up the elite, technocratic, globalist New World Order that they want to bring about in our age. Now, if we go back to the time of the founding of the roundtable groups, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the Milner roundtable groups, that is the Rothschilds created inner secret society, which had Cecil Rhodes as its front man. This secret society decided that a Fabian socialist order would be the best means for erecting a future world government. This is where we get the League of Nations. This is where we get the United Nations and all the Fabian socialist institutions that were created, especially in the post-World War II Bretton Woods Agreement period. So this is where we get institutions like the IMF, the World Bank, and after World War II, the United Nations. These groups need, as we know, some kind of religion to be an appendage, a kind of connector to reach the masses beyond just a governmental sphere. Most people are motivated by things more than the boring news cycle or something like that. They're motivated by the religious narratives that they're told. And so religious engineering, tweaking the religious myths and stories, is one of the key ways to engineer the population. And the global technocrats and elites have written about this in many, many, many texts in the last 100 years at least. We have, for example, if you go back 100 years in Dr. Carol Quigley's book, The American Anglo-American Establishment, we could expand this nowadays to be the Anglo-American Zionist Establishment. That is the power structure in the West, for sure. And he mentions that at the turn of the century, the Royal Society elites, the Milner circles, they were interested in various cults that were rising at the time, such as Christian Science. Most of us today, we don't really know much about Christian Science. It's had a few Hollywood attendees and members over the years, but never really gained a lot of traction. But at that time, they thought this might be a potential model world religion. And the reason that it was useful is that it was a situation where the cult kind of denied fundamental traditional biblical teachings and made everything about a kind of an inner mental state where you could heal yourself if you thought really hard about it. You didn't need doctors. It was mind over matter type of stuff. And it was connected to the spiritism and the mesmerism that was popular at that time as well. We mentioned a couple weeks back, Madame Blavatsky. She was investigated by certain circles of the British power structure, and they believed that she was a fraud. And it turned out she might have been or was likely a spy for the British power structure or for this very Milner Rothschild Rhodes circle. Now, the usefulness of these kinds of cults is not so much in the particularities or the oddities that they believe in, like mind over matter, but do they have the effectiveness, the usefulness in moving mankind into a view where collectivism is seen as the norm, where all of the religions should meld together? And does it promote and push the idea of a world government? I remember some years back, Manly P. Hall, the famous Masonic writer and lecturer, he had a whole series that used to be on YouTube. I don't know if it's still there or not, but it was about the history of comparative religion and astrology. And he came to the conclusion at the end, I thought this was very telling. He said, now, if you listen to all these lectures, the whole point of all this really is just to get you to admit that we need a world government and we need a United Nations socialist order. So the whole point of all the esoteric stuff was just to push people into accepting the United Nations and a socialist world government. I saw a recent news article noting that I think across the world, particularly in the West, obviously, there had been some 40 plus Fabians that have been elected to various offices. So this seems to be the operating system. I'm not saying that everybody who runs the power structure is a, quote, Fabian socialist. This is really the system that's rolled out by the banking and corporate elite for the masses. So we're going to see more and more of this. Really, this is behind the Great Reset. This is behind Klaus. This is behind all the Davos stuff, Bilderberg. This is their ideology that they push. And when we come back, we'll look at the origins of this mystical ideology. This is the Alex Jones from your guest host, Jay Dyer. Don't go anywhere.
It's been sold out for a while. It is pure deep earth crystal iodine. It's so hard to make. You've got to have DEA approved labs to do it. And it takes months and months to break it down in this special patented process. Nobody else has true nascent iodine. They put it on the label, but it's still bound to other elements. And it's not fully absorbable by the cells. It's the missing link. Even the UN estimates 2+ billion people have cognitive disabilities because of iodine deficiency. Up until the 30s, we had major IQ reduction because of lack of iodine in the U.S. food supply, especially in the U.S. Midwest. From the 30s to the early 80s, the government put crappy iodine in the salt by law. And IQs went up 15 points on average. Burnt defects went way down. And then in the early 80s, they took it out again. This is the deep earth crystal, pure, meaning atomic, on the atomic table. And it goes into the cells at a cellular level. Survival Shield X2, now available, 25% off, InfoWarsStore.com. 5-star review, or call toll-free, 888-253-3139.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're talking about the history of the world religion and the various test tube projects that the elites sought to experiment with to see if it could be the future world religion. One of those was the new world religion that they consider known as Christian Science. This didn't end up being the world religion, but in fact, Quigley notes that some of the writings and analyses from the Milner Circle, the Milner Group, were concerned with books like Imperial Administration from a man named Fisher. And Fisher also wrote a book called The International Experiment, which was about the League of Nations. He also wrote a book in 1929 called Our New Religion. In it, he posited that Christian Science might be the future religion, and that became the religion of the Milner Circles, including Lord Milner after his death. Many others, including the Astors, Lord Lothian, also were supporters of this new religious belief. Thus, Christian Science was one of the integral aspects of the atmosphere of the Rhodes, Rothschild, Milner, Astor, Cliveden set group. This is who's running the British Empire at this time as it's beginning to wane. But these are the same people in the background that run our power structure today. They're the same people that set up the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, etc. It's all the same people. And the Rockefellers and the Morgans and Warburg, Schiff, they all aligned themselves with this British Rothschild power structure as well. And that's where we get the deep state. This is the real deep state. The spy espionage deep state works for this deep state. This is the deep state. So this is why, for example, if you heard the interview earlier, Papadopoulos talked about British intelligence and the Five Eyes countries being very central to the plot to come up with and create the Russiagate narrative. That's because it's the same power structure that goes back to this time that we're talking about. Now, as we know, Christian Science didn't end up being very popular, and it was kind of a weird dud religion. It was kind of like Scientology before Scientology, in the sense that it tried to utilize a bunch of Hollywood converts to sell it as a new religion. And today we could think of Scientology as something like an analog to that. But of course, Scientology ends up being much more of an alien focused narrative with Xenu and, you know, cleansing and all this kind of weird stuff. But also, as we know, these groups oftentimes have intelligence connections and stuff going on in the background, which makes them highly sus, particularly their cult leaders. Now, we talked about this in the modern times, and we could see with Christian Science a lot of parallels with what we get in the New Age movement and the 1960s counterculture movements. But where do we get all this stuff in the ancient world? Again, we talked in the past 2 hours about some of this with Pythagoreanism and Platonism. But there's also some other key elements that I think you're going to pick up on when we talk about Hermeticism and Gnosticism in the ancient world, because the Hermetics and the Gnostics, if we look at the Cambridge Handbook of Western Mysticism and Esotericism, as I've been lecturing through recently, the Hermetic corpus, for example, which is crucial to many New Agers, the New Age movement does borrow in part from ancient Hindu thought and ancient Greek thought and Gnosticism. It turns out the Hermetic corpus of Hermes Trismegistus, the thrice great Hermes, has roots, modern scholars now believe, actually in Egyptian thought. The universe is, since a manifestation of God himself, It is a kind of pantheism where all reality is a manifestation of God or of Ra. And the idea is that we need to return to source, right? The path of religion is returning to this being, this entity. And that's because we fell into multiplicity. There's some mystical higher state to this primordial monad or this primordial unity or this primordial one. And we're in a lesser state of being because we are distinct from one another. We're distinct from other beings. We're distinct from objects. We are divided into man and woman. And this is going to be key because you're going to start to notice that there's a parallel in ancient mystical thoughts, ancient pagan religions, and the idea that we can transcend differentiation through a kind of hermaphroditism or a kind of bisexuality or a kind of non-binariness or trans ideology. In other words, trans ideology is not new. It might have been tweaked and developed for the modern world by the Tavistock Institute in the last 10, 15 years and promoted on a mass scale. It's admitted in mainstream media. But the idea that there's some higher mystical godlike status to being non-binary or not having gender is itself an ancient pagan idea. And while it's included in the teachings of the Hermetic corpus, for example, the Hermeticists in the corpus taught, going back to ancient Egyptian theology, that God was himself non-binary. God is androgynous, and so God creates God out of himself, and this creating of God outside of himself, which is the world, is thus ultimately non-binary, and so all distinctions have to relate to binaries in the created world. That means ultimately God was the androgynous being. Now, if you're familiar with Baphomet or Baphomet, the image of the satanic deity or being that has both genders, that becomes kind of a symbolic image, I guess, after Eliphas Levi and other more recent ritual magician people, this becomes adopted by various satanic groups to symbolize God or the devil or the ultimate principle or force in the universe. The idea is that ultimately the deity or the first principle is non-binary. So the mystical teaching, not just of modern satanic groups, but of many ancient mystery religions, is that to get past evil, we must get past differentiation and distinctions. In other words, there's an assumption that distinctions can't be good. They must be the source of evil. So the way the world is itself is the source of man's evil, not moral questions, but metaphysical questions. So it's a transferring away from the notion of good and evil being moral and saying more so, no, it's the world that's evil. The world is the source of my problems and the fact that there's distinctions and there's men and there's women. And so there's a Gnostic root here. And the Gnostics themselves believed, some of the ancient mystical groups, that God or the deity was ultimately a non-binary deity. So if we wanted to heal the world or repair the world, then we needed to go back to some non-differentiated, non-binary type of reality. Perhaps humans should develop away from being the polarities of man and women into some sort of hybrid or some sort of non-binary or something like that. Perhaps that could be achieved through transhumanism. And this is precisely why this is to create that ultimate blob reality that the global elite want. In other words, if differentiation is bad, then it's not just the differentiation of ethnic groups, tribal groups, people groups, nation states. Also, it would seem to follow that the differentiation of men and women is a problem. So how do we overcome that? Again, the assumption of all these groups is that God didn't create us this way. This is some sort of inherently evil status that we have to transcend or overcome or get away from. This is the source then of the hatred of the body that many religious groups have, including many of the modern trans movements, which then want to, in a way, transcend the limitations that they perceive to be imposed upon them unfairly, right? They were a woman born into a man's body or whatever. But these ancient mystical religions didn't go away when Gnosticism went away. In fact, the Gnostic teachings and traditions continued in this sense, and the Platonic teachings and Egyptian teachings continued in this sense through the Hermetic continuation into the Neoplatonists. And the Neoplatonists taught the exact same idea that we need to transcend differentiation because that's a lower status of being. You're more sophisticated if you have both aspects of man and woman integrated into you and your psyche, perhaps even into your biology, or if you have no gender at all. And so all of these movements, the attack on the human being, the attack on human biology and the human body, ultimately represent a kind of Neoplatonic or Gnostic tendency. In fact, in the medieval ages, Jewish mysticism can be described, as we all know, perhaps as Kabbalah. Kabbalah is the mystical side of Judaism, which sought to discover and cover issues like God's immanence versus his transcendence. How is God totally transcendent but also present in the world? How do we have differentiation in God? If God is one, then why do we see differentiation of God in, for example, the Old Testament? We have Yahweh, the angel of the Lord, and his spirit. We have God, but we also have the manifestation of God in time and space. How is that possible? We also have the idea of the emanations of God in Kabbalism. And beyond that, there's the idea that primordial man, as they called him, Adam Kadmon, was this sort of macrocosmic super being who was the original Adam, and he was bisexual. So the original state both of man and of God is to be bisexual. And so because the many of the Kabbalists taught that God is ultimately bisexual, and Adam before the fall was Adam Kadmon and was bisexual, then there is some sense in which perhaps returning to that state as well is the higher state. But note that this was not invented by or created by the medieval Kabbalist rabbis. This is actually the teaching of Plato, who got that teaching from the Egyptian mysteries in Plato's Timaeus. Plato's Timaeus conceives of the universe as a giant man, a kind of an Adam Kadmon, a macro prosopus. And the universe as a giant man is ultimately, as we know, it has to be non-binary, because binary relationships are lesser in status than they are, than it is the ultimate unity in Platonism. That's kind of a running, and that's probably a theme throughout most Greek philosophers, except for maybe a couple outliers. But how do we know that that's actually the case? Why would we think that there's some higher status to being one over being many? In other words, it just seems to be an assumption that many of these ancient mystical texts and sages and religious believers had, but they didn't really ever seem to question it. They just sort of assumed that because we read about, for example, in a monotheistic faith that God is one, that he's therefore more one than he is more than one, right? Or three or whatever. In fact, some of the Kabbalists said perhaps the one true God is perhaps 10 emanations. And perhaps those 10 emanations are 10 hypostases or 10 persons. But if they're 10 hypostases, then what would be wrong with the Christian view of God being three hypostases? And in fact, the Kabbalists also taught reincarnation, which, again, did not emanate or originate in their theology. Reincarnation is an ancient Indian and Pythagorean and Platonic teaching. Plato teaches reincarnation in the Republic and in other dialogues. We know the Pythagoreans taught that. And also in the Pythagoreans, you would get this same idea that one is better than two or three or four or five, right? Because to be one is better than to be many, right? We all know that. Well, do we? Why would we think that one is better than two or three? It's a religious metaphysical assumption that's read into something like numbers. But there's nothing about the number one that tells us that it's better or more perfect than the number two. It's just different. So the global elite technocrats, I believe, who are very adept at studying and understanding a lot of these principles, not so much because they necessarily believe in any of these religious or metaphysical spiritual principles, but because from their vantage point, at least for the scientism arm of the technocrats, they certainly don't believe in anything mystical per se. They see these as tools and techniques of control. So step out of the mindset for a moment of whether you think any of these things are true or false. and think about, well, how might they be used just in a pragmatic sense of control? And from a pragmatic sense, it makes perfect sense why you would want to utilize a religion or an idea that promotes ultimate unity over distinctions and diversity. I'm not talking about diversity in the DEI, you know, sense or like the woke sense. I'm talking about diversity in the real sense of things being actually distinct, like in a physical physicist slash metaphysics sense. Things not being identical. This thing is not that thing. I'm not you, right? But if you're a global elite technocrat, as for example, Aldous Huxley is in his famous book, The Perennial Philosophy, Huxley says that the new world order will need a new world religion. And it's got to be a religion that overcomes the idea that being particular, being distinct, being individual is somehow good. So he says that any religion, and he says particularly the Far Eastern religions are the most amenable to this, because they all teach that we got to get away from our particularity. In other words, you got to meld into the giant blob. Think about 80s movies like The Blob or recent movies like Assimilate or Invasion of the Body Snatchers. All those movies kind of illustrate this principle that the mind virus of, and I think in some of those, like the old Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that's kind of an anti-communist propaganda film where I agree with it. I'm not pro-communism. It's not all propaganda is bad. But in that story, you have a warning of the dangers of melding into a total collectivism, a kind of Borg hive mind, where all particularity and individualism is lost. There's also an opposite extreme, though, of thinking that I'm only an individual and I'm a, you know, strict, hardcore Ayn Randian ANCAP, and nobody, no collective metaphysical principles bind me. If you're consistent with that, you would be led into thinking that, well, then I can't have my gender imposed upon me. Who are you to tell me that there's some collective principle of what it is to be man or to be masculine or to be male? You can't impose that upon me. You're oppressing me. So there's an extreme of the ANCAP position that goes all the way to the other end of the polarity versus the extreme of the collectivist position, which says that, no, you see, the problem of man is that he thinks he's an individual and that individuality must be overcome. This is why Far Eastern philosophies have very easily overlapped, for example, with Marxism and communism, because those are philosophies and ancient religious traditions that devalue the individual at the expense of the collective. But in the West, you have the opposite dialectical extreme, where you devalue the collective to the radical expense of even the possibility of being part of a collective of gender. I mean, doesn't it logically follow that if no individual can be oppressed by collective realities, that you can't tell an individual that they're a man or that they're a woman? Who are you to oppress them with these collectivist ideas? And likewise, the same follows for being an ethnic group, an ethnos. You are born into these things. You didn't get to choose that. Well, who says that you get to choose everything in your life? Who says that that's oppressive? Being born into a situation of being this ethnic group or this gender is not oppression. And in fact, human beings, I think, are much more, they are much happier and they flourish when they accept what they are by nature rather than trying to fight against nature. If you fight against nature, you're inevitably going to lose. But ironically, the transhumanist technocratic occult order that they want to bring in is not only unnatural, it's intentionally forcing unnatural scenarios and situations for various reasons, but ultimately to push us into the global blob religion to create and world order. And so the religion has to be globalist, has to be a big blob. It can't allow for and accept real multiplicity. All must be merged into one. And that's the overriding principle, not just for different nation states, but also for religions and even for our very gender, our very, sexuality. It all has to be destroyed and overcome. And I think that probably a lot of the elite do believe in some kind of mystical form of gnosis or Luciferianism or Neoplatonism, because they seem to think that through Hegelianism and Kabbalism and Marxism and socialism, that you will, that they will be able to steer human evolution or the ascent to becoming spiritual beings or becoming technology or becoming computers or becoming cyborgs and androids. That's what all the DARPA research is about. That's what all the deep state tech research and even Silicon Valley is all about, this kind of stuff, because they believe that they can steer and commandeer, quote, evolution and become, as Bertrand Russell and Jonas Salk say, the high priests of evolution and science. So their perspective is that due to, quote, IQ, they have the mandate of nature to do these things, to decide who lives and who dies, to decide how the future will be run. Somebody, I think, Dr. James Lindsay, put up a recent clip of George Bernard Shaw, the famous satanic Fabian socialist, who said that in the future technocratic order, you will have to come to them and argue to them why you should be allowed to live, because the technocratic Fabian socialist state should have the right to put to death anyone that they deem non-essential or a non-essential worker. Now you might say, well, wait a minute. I thought the Fabian socialists were like the good guys, and that sounds like Hitler or Tiny Mustache Men followers. I thought they wanted to utilize mass large-scale eugenics. Ah, you see, but the Fabian socialists also believe in the same stuff. They just don't believe in doing it to lesser races. They believe in doing it to all of the races, and they believe in doing it on a mass scale in a slow kill way rather than a fast way. So everyone has been duped into thinking that a kind of elitist supremacist ideology went away with the National Socialists. And nowadays we're governed by democracy, equality, egalitarianism, and none of that is actually true. That is a front that's put up as a cover for the real elite, who have the same dysgenics, depopulation, Malthusian ideology. It's just not a Teutonic German knight-based philosophy. It's a philosophy for Malthusianism for the entire human race. Hence the last several years of promoting Stabbies, the Koof, etc., etc. It's all ultimately part of that same overall game plan. People still don't understand that this is not some accident. It's not, history is not a bunch of accidents, especially modern history. There is a real plan going on. Not everything happens according to plan. They don't run everything in the world. But this elite group does believe in this. They do have this ideology. They're very public and open about it in all of their books. We've lectured through dozens of these books. And yet we still have people who act like this is crazy. Well, I think some people are beyond rescue. Like some of those people, they're never going to get it. And so they're going to keep taking boosters. They're going to, whenever the next scamdemic happens, they're going to get all the boosters then. And there's just no stopping that. But we can stop these people if enough people who do have enough sense and discernment realize what's happening. And I think Alex has been key to that. And thanks to this audience and you guys out there for pushing this material. Go to the InfoWars store and support Alex. We're coming right back about the New World Order of religion.
Police have tracked down a killer whose crimes spanned the country. The man accused of killing a Maryland mother of five on a popular hiking trail has been captured in Oklahoma. Rachel Marin was dragged from a hiking trail in Maryland where she was raped and murdered. Hernandez allegedly has ties to the notorious MS-13 gang and entered the country illegally in February of last year.
The sheriff says that he fled to the U.S. illegally after murdering a woman in El Salvador in January of 2023. Just 1 month before he entered the U.S. last year, Interpol issued an arrest warrant for Hernandez.
We are 1,800 miles away from the southern border, and the American citizens are not safe because of failed immigration policies. This is the second time in just 2 years that an innocent Harford County woman has lost her life to a criminal in our country illegally.
As far as I'm concerned, the Biden administration has the blood of Rachel Warren in their hands.
Two officers were shot overnight. The suspect also shot in the exchange of gunfire.
Police also saying that suspect Bernardo Raul Castro Mata currently resides at a migrant shelter not too far away from here.
Christian Inga was arraigned today in New York City on charges of sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl after school last week in a shocking daylight attack. Police say the 25-year-old migrant from Ecuador approached two teens in the park at knife point. According to the criminal complaint, the suspect tied the boy and girl to one another, gagged them, then raped the girl before fleeing the scene. Police say Inga entered the U.S. illegally through Eagle Pass, Texas, back in 2021.
We've also learned from law enforcement here in New York that Christian Ingalandi was actually ordered to go back to Ecuador just a year later in 2022. Had he been deported, we may not have this case that has really struck a chord with people here in New York City, but even people around the country.
A Venezuelan gang known as Tren de Aragua has victimized thousands through extortion, drug and human trafficking, kidnapping and murder. And now U.S. law enforcement, including Customs and Border Protection and the FBI, say the gang has made their way into the country.
U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens, who has confirmed multiple arrests of alleged Tren de Aragua members over the last year, issued a warning in early April after reporting yet another arrest. Watch out for this gang, he said. It is the most powerful in Venezuela, known for murder, drug trafficking, sex crimes, extortion, and other violent acts.
Today, an illegal immigrant who killed someone in Troy is set to be sentenced. Carlos Corrales Ramirez pleaded guilty to the deadly stabbing last month. He admitted to killing a man near River and Dow Streets last September. The Honduras native was also charged with a stabbing in Maryland last February. He was arrested for that crime, but was later released because Maryland officials never extradited him.
Eight individuals, all from the Central Asian country of Tajikistan, were arrested in Los Angeles, New York, and Philadelphia. They entered the United States this year and in 2023, crossing the Mexican border. They were vetted and allowed to remain in the country. CBS News has learned further investigation uncovered the men had possible ties to ISIS-K.
Five men in the U.S. illegally were arrested Monday morning in Northeast Missouri after a teenage girl was reported missing in Indiana. The suspects are accused of kidnapping the 14-year-old from her home. They were tracked down in Macon County. All five of these men are charged with second-degree kidnapping and first-degree endangering the welfare of a child.
Developments in the brutal abduction and murder of a 12-year-old Texas girl whose body was found dumped in a bayou. Police arrested 21-year-old Johan Jose Rangel Martinez and 26-year-old Franklin Jose Pena Ramos, both illegal migrants from Venezuela. Surveillance video appeared to show both men with the girl just hours before she was found dead. Both men have been charged with capital murder, critics blaming Jocelyn's death on President Biden's border policies.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. Your guest is Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. I want to remind you that coming up, I think, in a few weeks in Nashville, I will be speaking at an event with Dr. James Lindsay, Stephen Coughlin, and several other speakers, including John Kleizek. It is the Cognitive Liberty event, and I will be speaking on psychological warfare and dialectics. And so you can go to cognitivelibertyconference.com if you are in the Nashville area. It's, I think, August 17th, if you want to get 16th and 17th. If you want to get tickets to that, head on over to that site. It's presented by Courtney Turner. And we're going to have a lot of fun in Nashville. Of course, I'll be selling books as well. And I'll be having my own event, I think, a week or two after that, again in Nashville. So look for that as well. Follow me on X, Twitter, to get all the updates and stay informed with what we're up to. I did a recent event in Las Vegas that was a lot of fun with some of our friends like Isaac Weishaupt and Made by Jim Bob, who you've seen on the Fourth Hour here. So we've been doing a lot of live events, and you can follow me to get tickets to those events. Also, good news, I'm about 200 plus, maybe 230 pages into the third installment of Esoteric Hollywood. So that should be done in the next month or two, and then it will go to the publisher. So probably in the next 3 months, there will be a third installment. It will be the completion of the trilogy of Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film, Of course, you can get part two as well. Signed copies at my website, jasonelson.com. In the shop, signed copies there, only there. Every book is signed, so you don't have to request to have it signed. If you get it from Jeff Bezos, it's not going to be signed, and I don't really get anything if you get it from Jeff Bezos. So be sure and get it from the website if you want access to those, because a lot of the information that you're seeing me talk about today, this kind of heavy historical, religious, geopolitical information, I cover it in a more lighthearted, fun way in my books. It's still pretty hefty info, but I cover it in the context of the propaganda in films and the religious symbolism in films. And so that kind of makes it a little more palatable for people to digest and ruminate on, rather than trying to read, you know, these big, boring global elite books, which we've done as well. But I wanted to go back to something that Quigley talked about in his book, because he says that in the 1930s, the Round Table groups in England were discussing different ways that the United Nations and the elite power structure could create in giant global security zones and federations and blocks. In other words, power blocks. This would be the ideal goal of, at that time, the League of Nations, and then what they wanted to do with the United Nations. Because you understand, it's the same group that established the League of Nations as this group, the Roundtable Group, that also then set up, after World War II, the United Nations, that they then wanted to be the kind of proto-world government, but it still has never really manifested. And so it looks more and more like the things that really help establish the next phase of international organizations with actual power is a war. Now, there could be smaller things like pandemics or something like that, which Bertrand Russell called for, by the way. He said that pandemics are great because they might be a good way to depopulate the earth. He says that an impact of science on society. But Quigley notes that by the 1920s, the New York Times was already propaganda for British intelligence and the Milner Roundtable groups. This was because many CFR members who were linked with the Chatham House Royal Society groups in the UK were promoting and pushing the propaganda to get the United States involved in all of the conflicts that the British power structure wanted to be involved in. This included pushing things through the Rhodes Scholars networks in the United States, all of whom were pushing propaganda at the behest of the British Rothschild Milner circles. This is admitted. Page 283. And how did they do this? Well, they did this through their think tanks, foundations, and groups like the Carnegie Endowment, things like the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Rockefeller Created Council on Foreign Relations. As we said, in the 1930s, they were discussing through entities like the Christian Science Monitor, Christian Science, as we said, which was one of their proto-seed test tube plans for a world religion. In the Commonwealth of God, Lord Curtis talked about the possibility of, in the 1930s, creating what he called a European Central Union. And he was led to this because of the argumentation of Count Coudenhove Kalergi. And as you know, Count Kalergi believed in the destruction of the European nation states by mass immigration. So if you flood migrants and others into the EU, or what was going to be the EU, you could help dilute the existing groups to then more easily merge them into a Fabian Socialist European Union. So this was discussed and planned in the 1930s. It was then carried out after World War II via the OSS and the CIA. And that's discussed in detail in Johann Rathjou's book on the history of the Fabians. So you understand that this is the operating plan. This is the game plan. I'm not making this up. This is not a conspiracy theory. It's literally in one of the most famous geopolitical historian writers of recent history. You can see for yourself right here. He mentions the Kalergi plan and that's the birthplace of the EU. It is not actually Hitler or Tiny Mustache Man's idea for an EU. This is way prior to Hitler. Hitler also had an idea and a plan for an EU in his model. His model would have been different than the model of the Fabian Socialists. But the Fabian Socialists ended up winning out And it was their plan that was adopted, and that's the eventual EU that we get. This is why Daniel Estulin, for example, in his famous book, Bilderberg Group, he shows the actual Bilderberg documents from, I think, the 50s, where Bilderberg also was discussing how to roll out this same 1930s Kalergi EU plan. That's why General Wesley Clark said that the EU nation states would have to be destroyed. The same famous general who I think wanted to run for president several years ago, tried to. The same Wesley Clark who was head of NATO. Well, he said this because he knew that the creation of the EU, these giant continental blocks, is the model that they've had going back to the Rose, Rothschild, Milner groups, the Kalergi plan. So you talk about this, people say, oh, it's racist, it's racist. It's literally his plan. He wrote books. I don't know if people don't understand. Like, you can go read these people, right? He has a book called Practical Idealism by Kudinov Kalergi. So there's nothing wrong with talking about facts that actual geopolitical leaders, he's Bill Clinton's mentor, famous professor at Georgetown. He openly talks about these things in his books. And he's not a conspiracy theorist. He's part of the system. He's an apologist and a defender of this system. So he says that the roundtable groups must utilize all forms of machinations, infiltration. And they said that what we need with the League of Nations, and when it failed, they said we need something better than that. The League of Nations was intended to be a permanent roundtable group. So the League of Nations itself is, according to Quigley, another roundtable group. And the same principle is there when we look at or think about the G7, the G8, the Five Eyes, these kinds of things. That's like a spy version of the same type of stuff. This is how the countries are actually run. This is why the entire Western world hopped on board of the mandates that were rolled out in the last 3 or 4 years and had nothing to do with what any individual nation states, or even U.S. states wanted. It was all a top-down order from who? Like, who was making all the... Oh, was it Fauci? It wasn't just Fauci. Was it that other woman they blame instead of Fauci? No, I think it comes from even higher levels. The same people who set up these roundtable groups, these steering committees, they make these decisions. In the 1920s, when they had infiltrated many of the United States news organizations, news outlets, etc., the CFR was able, through the Institute for Pacific Relations in the 1920s, to sway the entire U.S. through mass large-scale propaganda. This is because they had figured out, through Walter Lippmann and through the Tavistock researchers, how to create and manufacture public opinion and public consent. The relationship between the Milner Group and the valuable little monthly publication, for example, called International Conciliation, was exercised through the parallel group in America, which was organized by the associates of J.P. Morgan. This was before World War I, and they made their most intimate connections with the Milner Group at the Peace Conference of 1919. We have already mentioned the American group in connection with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Institute for Pacific Relations. Through this connection, many of the activities and propaganda of the Milner Group were made widely available to the public in America. So you understand that this goes back to the 1920s and before that, same people who set up the Federal Reserve. And he even says Chatham House, Toynbee Hall, the Geneva School of Graduate International Studies, Carnegie Endowment for Peace, these are the people that are really running the country. And it's a model of hidden in plain sight governance, right? So the groups like we're mentioning are public, but they actually have an secret core, you could say, that collude with the other groups. They make decisions and then they tell governmental people what to do. They hand down policies to them. And if you don't go along with it, well, you might regret it. The compromised sex stuff might come out about you, or you might find yourself JFK'd or something like that, right? But I mean, you understand, this is not a conspiracy book. But I guess people don't. Do Americans even read books anymore? I don't even know. I don't see books anymore in terms of bookstores. I see toy stores, and you walk in, and it smells like a bunch of, I mean, funk. Opop is a good way to put it. I mean, because people smell like funk when they go to the bookstores, which are now toy stores. I'm not joking. Have you been to a bookstore lately? Half of the bookstores are manga and toys. And that's why the country is collapsing, is because people don't know who the CFR and who these entities are that actually run the country are. And yes, there's also AIPAC too. It's not an either or. It's all of the above. All of these groups tell our country what to do. And the central way that they do this is via their control through the banking power. And that's why Ron Paul has been talking about this for so long. And does anybody even talk about the Federal Reserve anymore? Have we forgotten the Federal Reserve? I know that in the last election cycle, Trump actually mentioned it several times. To his credit, Trump was saying we've got to deal with this Federal Reserve problem. But how do you get away from that? Well, in my opinion, there's only one way out of that, and that's what Bitcoin is. There's literally no other options out of that than Bitcoin, because even gold can be manipulated. You can always inflate through mining, flooding the market with more gold. Gold is not sensible in a internet-based world. Nobody's going to take giant bags of, you know, gold, carry them. Are we going to sail in our, you know, Spanish conquistador ships across the ocean and deliver giant chests of gold to pay for, you know, real estate? No, it's just not even, it doesn't make any sense. Okay, we're in the 21st century. We're not going to be using bags of gold and gold bars. Now, people can still have gold as an alternate currency, but gold is actually the currency that the elite prefer. And I'm like the classical elite. I'm not talking about today. I think that eventually when people figure out what Bitcoin is, they will move in that direction. In fact, Trump announced today he would be attending the Nashville Bitcoin conference. Thank you. Exactly. We've been talking for a long time. I've been talking about Bitcoin since 2017, and I consider myself late to the game. I was earlier than Michael Saylor, but I wasn't as early as Max Keiser, unfortunately. I wish I had been as early as Max Keiser, but... 2017 is still pretty early. Now I think Trump is seeming to figure out Bitcoin too. That's great. That's a tremendous advancement in terms of seeing Trump move in that direction. Glad to see that. But the key here is, I think, to understand that there's not a whole lot of ways or options out of the mess that we're in. But we can't get out of the mess that we're in until we first recognize that there is a mess. And we have to understand, too, that it's not just things like AIPAC. It's not just things like the various lobbies and the steering committees and the groups. There's also other problems that are going to have to be addressed, like Islam. Islam is a big problem. And even Quigley says that many of the British elite understood and saw Islam as a chess piece on the chessboard, as a tool to use. This is why, for example, Europe was flooded with Muslims. That was done by design to change Europe according to the Kalergi plan. And this is mentioned as part of the Milner plan. They saw a positive use for Islam as well. Perhaps Islam might even be a future world religion that could be used. So, in other words, it's not necessarily this or that thing. It's like, oh, well, I thought it was going to be Christian Science. Well, there might be Islam, too. The elite can experiment and consider various possibilities, including the support and aid to Muslim groups throughout the EU and especially Londonistan in the UK, because it might be a veritable future world religion. Now, why would I say that? Because isn't Islam against the Zionists, and don't they fight each other, and isn't there this clash and so forth? Well, many scholars actually point out that the origins of Islam are actually highly, not totally, but highly Talmudic. Many historians and scholars, I tweeted about this the other day, on the history of Islam will note that Islam arises out of Nestorian Christianity, which was an aberrant, schismatic form of Christianity, the latent Arab paganism of that time, which is why they still have like the Black Stone at Mecca, and other influences like Neoplatonism and Sufism. And Sufism does have an early origin back to Ali and Al-Ghazali. They were arguably early Sufis. So the mystical side of Islam is also Neoplatonic and influenced by some of these strains that we talked about. And it was also seen, as we've seen earlier in these lectures, by the elites in the UK as a way to begin to change Europe. The Fabian Socialists were the first to import Sufi Islam into the UK as a test, as a way to experiment in changing the structure and demographics of the UK to de-Christianize it. And they felt like the Sufi branch and version of Islam was a lot more palatable and amenable because of its kind of openness and mysticism and kind of syncretism, you could argue, that that approach might be better than bringing in hardcore Sunni radicalism, which, by the way, the British Empire also had a key role through the Muslim Brotherhood in aiding and creating and fostering and funding. Al-Dudi and others, Al-Afghani, these figures were closely connected to British intelligence, going back to St. John Philby and T.E. Lawrence, who were British intelligence operatives who went and carved up and created the modern Middle East as it is today. That was all created by the British Empire, British intelligence operatives and agents. The same people who were at the same time helping to found and create MI6 out of the Secret Intelligence Service, which was all founded, as we know, by Fabians, exactly. So you have to keep in mind that it's not a battle against capitalism and Marxism. It's a battle against anything contra Fabian socialism. And Fabian socialism was also supported by people like Moses Hess, for example. Well, I take that back. Let me rephrase that. Ratzio says, the idea of a united Europe actually originated prior to even the Royal Society with liberal capitalists. Marx and Engels co-conspirators like Moses Hess advocated, for example, for a federation of England, France, and Germany as early as the 1840s. Around the same time, the French writer and statesman Victor Hugo campaigned for a United States of Europe. Its liberal capitalist origins are confirmed by Engels himself, who described Victor Hugo as a bourgeois writer and that his project was bourgeoisie. Unsurprisingly, the socialist camp represented Wilhelm Leibniz, Karl Kautsky, V.I. Lenin, Arthur Ponsonby, and Trotsky. All of these together were arguing capitalist and liberal capitalists and Marxist socialists for an ultimate united Europe. Why do they all want an EU? Well, an internationalist approach to governance requires internationalization. And that's, of course, essential. Essentially, ultimately, that's Trotskyism. It's Lenin and Trotsky. It's even less so Stalinism. Stalin tried to kind of step back from some of that. And that's why the Trotskyites called Stalin a bourgeoisie dictator. Among the most vigorous promoters of the idea of a united Europe, and this is the model for where they want to go for the entire world, you understand, was the Australian socialist Richard Count Coudenhove of Kalergi, as well as France's socialist prime minister Aristide Briand, a leading figure in French sections of the Second International. Briand became the foreign minister in 1925 and declared his ambition to establish a United States of Europe. So this all comes out of Fabian socialism, Marxist, and liberal monopoly capitalists, literally all of it. In 1931, Sir Arthur Salter, former Fabian Society member who was the head of the economic finance section of the League of Nations, published a collection of papers about the United States of Europe, in which he explored the building of a federalized Europe, declaring that a European Union must be a political reality. The first organization that became the seeds of what we know of as the actual supranational entity of the EU was Salter, together with Jean Monnet and the European Coal and Steel Community. This is what we read the other day that was mentioned by Jacques Attali in his book Millennium. Jacques Attali said that his job as the banker of the newly created EU, the EU Bank for Reconstruction and Development, was to integrate the former Soviet bloc, Stalinist, NKVD, KGB-run countries into the EU. Through what? Banking, debts, and loans. The key elements that would go on in the 1940s and 50s to the creation of the EU was the Bilderberg Group and then the European Economic Community. The 1957 Treaty of Rome, all of these played a key role in bringing about what we know of as today's European Union. But the actual people on the ground bringing it about were all members of the OSS and the CIA. This is why, and as many of the writers note, even Attali, the key to controlling Europe is to control Germany. Germany is kind of the heart of Europe, especially controlling Frankfurt. And that's why the CIA has had such a key role in being established there and running Germany since World War II. That's why there was all these re-education programs, as Rod Tew notes in his book. I think Candace Owens recently talked about the brainwashing of Germans after World War II. She's talking about what I've been talking about and what this book talks about. That is so that Germany would not fall back into any kind of position that would pivot against the U.S. So you understand that from a geopolitical standpoint, it was crucial to make sure that the EU and the control of Germany never pivoted away from the United States towards something like Russia. And that's why Russia sought for a long time to try to make alliances with Germany. That's part of the reason why there were Soviets in Germany. The East German Stasi is that was a key location for the control of Europe. So Soviets did want to have an influence and a control in Europe, but whether they wanted to actually ever invade it is a different question. And that gets it to Operation Gladio. So we're dealing with a real planned rollout of socialism that utilizes religion as a tool to simply push anything related to Fabian socialism, which is the alliance between Marxism and monopoly capital. So if you'd like to read more about that, you can get my books over at jasonanalysis.com in the shop. You can follow me on X because I cover these topics regularly. You can follow me on my channels on most social media outlets. And again, I lecture on these topics all the time. You can subscribe to my work as well on Rockfin or my website to get access to the archives where I've lectured through dozens and dozens and dozens of these texts. And be sure and go to the store, the InfoWars store, and support Alex. Get access to all those great products to make sure that Alex continues to be on air to fight the good fight. And God be with you all.
I don't care if he's pooped his pants.
My butt's been wet. My butt's been wet. My butt's been wet.
I don't care if he can't put a sentence together.
The total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either.
Show me he can't do the job, and then I'll say, okay, maybe it's time to go. Yeah, Biden had a bad day, but this guy couldn't tell the truth if it split his lip.
What did Trump do? Why?
I have poopy days all the time.
The percentage of women who register to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line.
Damn it. For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Joe Biden will read.
I dissent. End of quote. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Four more years. Four more years.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.